Hi guys, welcome to another episode of The Takeoff. I am very excited to be with you today. This episode is going to discuss the five reasons why the PQS industry in Australia and New Zealand could fail. So this might throw a little bit of fuel on the fire as such, might wind people up or poke the bear from my side of things. I'm not doing this to do that. I want to add some context around things as well to show the give you the listener an idea of my background and experience and the reason why I'm doing this today. So to give you some idea, I've recruited in the PQS industry for 10 years. I've done so in Ireland, UK, Australia, New Zealand. And one of the things I noticed when I moved to Australia was the QS role was so under-recognized in Australia compared to even New Zealand, even the UK, certainly Ireland anyway. And I found it quite strange and interesting, you know, because in the UK, Ireland and New Zealand, there's a big demand for quantity surveyors. And I know that the role of a quantity surveyor as a construction project quantity surveyor is probably called, well, it is called a contract administrator in Australia. But the PQS, you know, if you're talking to the normal, say, construction manager in Australia and you talk to them about a quantity surveyor, they'd initially think of a PQS, you know, someone in an office, in a suit, you know, doing measurements. That's probably the first thing that comes to their mind. And still a large portion of the work that I do is in the PQS industry. So I see the challenges every single day that PQSs are facing in Australia and as well in New Zealand. And it's quite interesting because there are a number of things that I feel like the QS industry just hasn't come to terms with. And over the last sort of 2 years, I can just see, you know, directors of PQS firms just really scratching their heads. They're wondering, you know, how are we going to keep up? How are we going to manage to compete? How are we going to earn good fees? You know, all of these things, I believe, need to be challenged, need to be looked at, need to be innovated in order to really survive as an industry. In 10 years' time, in Australia, where will the PQS industry be? I don't know. These are five things that I'm going to talk about today to hopefully add some context, to give some ideas to some directors or business owners to really just have something to think about long term. Because if you think all I do every day is speak to estimators, QSs, cost planners, design managers, and I can see what's happening with every single firm. You know, the one of the great things about being in recruitment is that you get a bird's eye view of nearly every single business in the industry, you know, from the tier ones right through to the little boutiques. And, you know, we see what's done well, we see what's done not so well, we hear the feedback on the industry about certain firms. We get a lot of information that we can use to help other firms maybe make better decisions, better hiring decisions, and that sort of thing. So five reasons why the PQS industry in Australia and New Zealand could fail. First off the rank, it's no longer an attractive job in Australia. Sorry to say that, but it's no longer something that a 22-year-old, 23-year-old just graduated from university wants to do. Very, very, very few numbers. So very low representation in university. From, I'm not exactly 100% on my facts on this, but in 2020 or 2021, I believe that in the Queensland University of Technology, there is less than 20 quantity surveyors graduated. And if you compare that to construction management, there was, I believe, around like 120 or 150 from construction management. Why is that? Because construction management, property development, project management is a far sexier job than quantity surveying. And those companies, like the McNabs, the Hutchies, the Richard Crooks, the Pro Builds, or previously Pro Build, Multiplex, they do a fantastic job of selling those careers to young people coming out of university. If you're you know, if you've done a construction manager degree, you're, say, a female who's decided to jump into construction, and, you know, you're looking for a really exciting opportunity, and you're seeing the, you know, multiplexes of the world or the land leases of the world, you know, they're promoting themselves all over social media, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and they're really doing a great job of selling themselves. Now, if you flip that to the quantity surveying industry, I have never seen a quantity surveying company do something innovative or different or exciting. And that's really becoming to the forefront now. We're getting such low numbers of QSs graduating, so we're nearly completely reliant on the overseas market. So, you know, you're looking at guys coming in from Ireland, UK, South Africa, Asia to come in and do a good job. And what happens is there's obviously hurdles to go through, visas, there's, you know, the whole nonsense about needing to have Australian experience. That's another thing that needs to be changed radically. And what happens is, so there's such few people coming through, those QS, those directors of PQS firms go, okay, then we're going to have to take in someone from UK, Ireland, or whatever, and we embed them in. But how long does that take? You know, there's little like drips and drags of people coming through, you know. Really, really what the industry needs is those 120 construction managers coming through and 50 of them being interested in quantity surveying for the industry to survive, right? So first of all, we've got low representation. Second of all, we've got low numbers of people graduating. And then the ones that are working in the industry do a terrible job of selling the job to others. So usually they're overworked and underpaid. And, you know, they don't really do a good job of going out there and saying, this is why you want to be a QS, you know. But if you were to go and speak to, you know, you go and look at, you jump on LinkedIn for 30 seconds, you'll see, you know, the big contractors out there, you know, cutting the red tape and talking about how exciting it is to finally complete this building. And that's an issue. It's a little bit like recruitment. Like, it's hard for me to build social media presence because I don't have my product is people, but I can't put the face to the name of that person. So if I'm representing John Smith, I can't put John Smith on all my social media because it affects his confidentiality. A little bit like, it's a little bit similar in the quantity surveying industry. Like, how can you show what you're working on? You know, is it because obviously you're doing cost management, you're doing contract negotiation. It's difficult, which I understand, but there are lots of things that the QS industry can do better in that respect. So the first thing is, to young people right now, this is no longer an attractive job. And I believe the PQS industry is to blame for that. And we could talk about this in further detail as the episode goes on. So number two, the industry is dominated by traditional old quantity surveyors, right? And that's, again, that's a fact. And when I say old, of course, you know, I'm not talking about 90-year-olds. I mean, we're not really old. I'm talking about guys 50 plus. The industry's dominated by that, and it's the old classic sort of male peel and steel. You look at, you know, all the going to tier one, tier two PQS firms, have a look at their board, and 90% of them will be in a suit, will most likely be from the UK, Ireland, South Africa, Australia. You might have a few guys in there from Sri Lanka or Asia, but is it like a proper diverse environment? Now, there is an argument that you have a lot of sort of Asian, Sri Lankan QSs, but when I say diverse, it's not diverse in like the spectrum of like interest, you know. It's a hard one to describe, but if you were a 25-year-old female who's maybe moved to Australia, and you know you're maybe from originally from, I don't know, Asia or somewhere like that, a lot of the time QS industry is not the industry that they want to go towards, because it's going to take a long time for them to get recognized. Usually they'll be thrown into cost planning, estimating, you may do that for, you know, 4 or 5 years, you know, and it's just not an industry that's really, I believe, got a good name for it being diverse and having a variety of people of all races, of all ethnicities at a high level. There, in that sort of junior to intermediate, of course, there's a range of different nationalities and that sort of thing. But at that senior level, I just don't see any flag bearers within the industry really saying, you know, being a motivator for others to do the same. You know, there's a quote, and I think it's something like, be the change you want to see. You know, like you have to allow people to get into these positions in order for others to be inspired to get into those positions. You know, if you're again going back to that 25-year-old female from Asia, you know, if you're looking at the, you know, the top directors in the firm that you're in, maybe it's a global PQS firm, and you know, it's all white guys in suits, you know, who are native English speakers, you know, it's maybe not the most attractive role for them. But if they were to look at different parts of the industry, might be architecture, you know, really diverse range of people and personalities and profiles in architecture. If it was structural engineering or civil engineering, you know, I believe those industries are just so much more diverse and have a range of people at the high level who are making waves and being inspirational to others. So on the side of these people who are very sort of traditional QSs, they treat the job very traditionally as well. So the very much so commonly in this market, the QS company is super inflexible. Okay. They work their people hard, and you know, it's 50 hours a week is very, very common in the QS industry. There's very little flexibility. And what I'm seeing, a lot of young people come out of the QS industry to get into construction, into main contracting, into consultancy, into government sector, because they're looking at it and going, well, it's 50 hours a week here, I'm being paid 90K or 100K or 120K even. And really, for me to get to the director role, it could be 20 years, could be 10 years. But how long am I going to accept 50 hours a week at 120K a year? You know, the CA who I went to school with or went to uni with is making 160, and they're only working 40 hours a week. And, you know, they can pick up their kids and maybe they do a couple hours, you know, every day from home. And there's a bit of flexibility around it, you know, and also they're getting out the site and they're driving around and, you know, they have a bit more life flexibility. But I'm in the office doing 50 hours a week and I've got such and such over my head, you know, getting at me because my measurement hasn't been absolutely perfect, you know. Because we're so many traditional people in the QS industry, they treat the role super traditionally and they're afraid of change in any way. You know, I actually thought the QS industry would have evolved because of COVID, because of, you know, the no longer is there a requirement to literally have every single person in the office, you know, for 40, 50 hours a week. You know, there people now look at it and go, well, I was able to do my job during COVID, you know, and that was a very, very testing time. So why can't I do that job, you know, that I was doing at home? Why can't I have 2 days at home now? And I actually find that a lot of QSs these days look at it and go, I get more done when I'm at home because one, you know, I can start 8 o'clock in the morning. I can flick on my laptop. I can do measurement and piece all day long, you know, and I'm not getting, you know, pulled into a meeting here, you know, asked a load of questions from some project managers. You know, I'm not getting peppered with questions all over the show. I just get the job done better when I'm, you know, at home. And I understand, you know, I run a business at the same time, and I understand that, you know, you do want to see people in the office. You do want to build a culture, but I just don't think that in today's market, people want to be in the office 40, 50 hours a week. And especially when you're getting underpaid, you know, and especially when there's not offering that level of diversity or collaboration or a career opportunities in the future. You know, Albert Einstein once said, "We cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we used when we created them." And I absolutely love that quote, you know. And if you're not ready to change your thinking, if you're not ready to develop and move forward with your vision, with what you think, then you're going to end up, you know, in a very difficult situation. You've always got to innovate. You've always got to change, you know. My dad always talks about Madonna as being one of the great examples of an artist who can adapt to the current market trends, you know. And I mean, Madonna's probably one of the biggest selling artists of all time. And you know, there's some inspiration in that, is in that you've got to look at adapting to the market as is right now, not as is in 1991 or 2001 or 2011. Where in moving into 2023, things are moved on, things have changed, and we've got to really come to the party. Okay, number three, and I've just mentioned this, but people are overworked and underpaid. And I have this conversation with directors all the time, and their thing, I feel a sense of understanding with these directors, because I believe that they want to pay more, but they can't pay more because of the fee structures that they have. But then I wonder to myself, is, well, why don't you change your fee structure? And I again come back to, because they're afraid to change, and they're afraid to adopt, and they're afraid to innovate. And again, what that does is that creates that, if you're afraid to do that, then your behaviors are exactly the same from the outset. So then you create a traditional firm. So people are going to be overworked and underpaid, and that creates burnout. And then all of a sudden people leave, and then you have to hire people in. And it becomes very, very, very difficult. Okay. So I understand, but again, we have to change. My business in 2020 is completely different from my business today. My business in, when I was working in the industry in 2016 and what I work, how I work today, completely different. Okay. And, you know, I was taught recruitment the old school way, you know, like beating the phones, talking to people constantly, all that sort of stuff, right? And there is going to be an element of the traditional way to do quantity surveying, okay? And I know, you know what? I believe to learn that traditional way is the best way to learn, because you have those fundamentals. But if you can utilize those fundamentals and continue to change and innovate, that gives you such a more exciting product to go to market with. And all of a sudden, more eyeballs are coming to you in terms of the talent in the market. They're going, well, those guys are doing something a bit different. I really am quite interested in that, you know. And that is an easier sales pitch for people like me working in the recruitment industry, because why would you move from XYZ consulting to ABC consulting? You're working in exactly the same market, on exactly the same projects, as exactly the same job title, on exactly the same money. Why would you move? There's nothing. And you as a business owner will think that you have something different, but you don't have anything different. You don't, genuinely. You may think, oh, we've got better training. Oh, we've better culture. No one cares about that. Genuinely, no one cares. They go, right now, candidates only care about money, job title. And you might think, well, you know, the market will change again. Of course it will. But right now, I feel for the QS in this market, because they are probably making, on an hourly rate perspective, the same as what a graduate probably makes. You know, they might be making $40 an hour, which works out about 80 grand a year, you know. And if you're a graduate and you're coming into the industry and you're being offered a job by XYZ Consulting at 60 grand a year as a grad, but you could go to McNabb's or Hutchies or whoever, whatever, XYZ contracting at 90 grand a year, why would you go to the one at 60? You know, honestly, because there's no benefit in that for the individual, you know. So I believe that we need to change. We need to think about how we structure our fee proposals. We need to think about what clients that we're actually engaging with. If you're engaging with the same clients that are expecting you to do the same thing, get the same results, and you haven't got an ability to influence that client, I'm not too sure. Is that the client that you believe is going to build your business long term? And you really should be engaging with clients that are going to be building your business long term, because really, if you're just doing rinse and repeat and you find yourself in the same situation in 5 years' time, again, probably haven't progressed as a business. So that's number three. People are overworked and underpaid. Number four is something that we've already spoke about, but companies are way too fearful of change. Okay. And there's some firms that I recruit for, and they just want the same shit. It's like, it's honestly, it's hard to muster up the ability to recruit from sometimes, because they want, oh, I want a county surveying degree. I want them from this university. I want a member of the AIQS or ICS, you know, and I want 5 years experience. I want them to be perfect fluent English. I want them to be 120K. I want them to travel all around here. I mean, like, seriously, in today's market, you will find no one under those conditions. Right now, I don't even know if you, as a quantity surveying firm, that you should be requiring a quantity surveying degree, because there's so few candidates coming out of university with quantity surveying degrees. Okay. And the shameful thing is that, an utterly shameful thing is that these companies who want all this stuff will not look at someone coming in from Egypt, Sri Lanka, Dubai, Qatar, with qualifications coming out of their nostrils, and they will overlook them for someone who is coming from the local market and hasn't got half the stuff that they've got. And why? I honestly don't know. Sometimes I just go, I mean, really? Seriously? Like, what more do you want? You've got someone who's more qualifications than your directors, right? You've got someone who's probably got way more experience working with different nationalities. They can probably speak about three or four languages. You know, there's always this thing is, oh, the communication barrier, not knowing the lingo. You know, what lingo do they need to know? G'day, mate. You know, like, seriously, get a grip. These people are sometimes masters, double masters. Sometimes they've worked on the biggest projects in the world, right? And you're telling me that they can't pick up the local lingo in 2 weeks? It blows my mind. Honestly, it blows my mind. They've probably got better contract knowledge, you know, international forms of contract, international forms of health and safety. You know, like, why is it that the Australian market and the New Zealand market thinks that local experience is the be all and end all? It's complete nonsense. When I worked in the UK, I worked in London, probably one of the financial epicenters of the world. They didn't have that attitude. Like, it's such an old, like, complete nonsensical attitude. You know, we're talking, I'm in London recruiting for some of the biggest construction firms in London, and all that they're looking for is track record. What have you done before? Can you speak English? Great, right? Can you speak other languages? Great. Track record is the main thing that they're looking for. That's it. And then they're employing them, paying them right. And that's why, you know, like, cities like that grow exponentially, because they don't have this complete prehistoric attitude that we need people with local experience. Honestly, it's complete nonsense. So companies are fearful of change. That's one thing that needs to change. Changing the way we think about immigrants in this country massively needs to change. And I'm saying that from New Zealand and Australia. We need good people to come through, and we need to start offering them opportunities that, or they will leave and they will tell all their friends back home, don't go to Australia or New Zealand, because you won't get a job for 6 months and you'll be living in a shitty apartment and it'll be miserable. And that's what they'll tell them, and they won't go. And they'll go to London, they'll go to New York, you know, they'll go to the cities that are actually welcoming immigrants to come through. And those cities will grow and we'll be in the same shit, doing the same thing, with the same problems in 5 and 10 years' time. So companies are too fearful of change. They're too reliant on qualifications. They're too reliant on being parts of groups that really don't matter, right? I'll speak out of turn here, but what does AIQS, NZIQS, RICS, what do these offer apart from being recognized as an engineer or being recognized as a QS? But realistically, you know, there's the professional body. I get it, it's fine, you know, but really it's just a money making tool that you pay a few $1,000s a year for. And, you know, how many events do you actually go for and how many opportunities do you get from those groups? Very, very little. And these companies who are demanding that you need to be part of this, again, nonsense, complete nonsense. And so why do these companies want this? They want this because they want to put it on their profile and their CVs to get into these large government sector projects. We've got 20 quantity surveyors in here who are all part of the AIQS and recognized by the AIQS or ICS or whatever. And that's all that they do it for. But, you know, the reason that they're doing that is because they've done that 20 years ago and 30 years ago. That's the reason why they're doing it. It's not going in and saying, I've got 20 experienced quantity surveyors with an exceptional project track record. Here's the project track record. Have a look at that. You know, it's all this box ticking, non-challenging, non-innovating, non-pushing their clients back, staying in the same position. You know, and ultimately, if you have to go 2 steps back to go 5 steps forward, then go 2 steps back. You know, but the problem is that companies don't want to do that because they don't have the strategy. They don't have the vision. They're not thinking 10 years down the line. They're thinking 10 days, 10 weeks down the line. You know, they're thinking of what's in front of them, not the what's here now. They're not thinking of what's going to be there in the future. So too fearful of change. Jim Rohn said, your life doesn't get better by chance. It gets better by change. So let's have a think about that. Number 5, and my last point, is the marketing in quantity surveying is horrendous. I mean, it doesn't exist. It's shambolic. It is mind-blowing how bad it is, okay? I have never seen one quantity surveying firm in the world do marketing well. Zero. Absolutely nil. And I challenge you, listener, think of one. And if you can think of one, email to me because I want to talk to them because it would be an absolute joy to recruit for someone with good marketing. But there is not one firm out there that does marketing well. And the reason for this is, I'm not a biologist, right? But there's probably different types of people in the world, right? There's ones that are thinking laterally, the numbers people. They're the ones that are very strong, the attention to detail. They're contractually strong. And then you've got the creative people out there who are more focused on that, the people and marketing and colors and creativity, right? Quantity surveyors, most of the time, aren't like that, right? But that does not stop companies getting good at marketing, you know? There's financial firms out there who absolutely smash it on marketing. And again, they're employing the same types of people. And quantity surveying has done a complete terrible job of selling quantity surveying to future quantity surveyors. Why do you think the numbers of QSs graduating are so, so low? Because there's no inspiring stories of quantity surveyors showcased or marketed ever, period. Now, if you go up to the Sydney Build Expo, or, you know, you go to, you know, RICS event or AIQS event of the year or whatever, you might hear a few, but who are they selling to? 50, 60-year-old quantity surveyors is what they're selling to. They're not selling to 21-year-olds, 22-year-olds, or even the 19-year-olds that need to hear this to decide to go on the quantity surveying. So, you know, that really, the quantity surveying firms, the first thing that they should be doing is employing phenomenal marketing people. That's the number one thing that you should be doing, is employing someone who is a savage on TikTok. And you'll listen to this and go, TikTok, what the hell's that got to do with recruitment? I'm telling you right now, TikTok, Instagram Reels, YouTube Shorts, Instagram as a whole, LinkedIn as a whole. See if you get someone who comes in and starts selling the stories of your people, I am 1000% sure that your company starts to grow. I am, without a shadow of a doubt, know that you start to get better people coming through. You actually start to create change within the industry, because more people will start to inquire, but what is a quantity surveyor? Right, come in, young fella, young lady, come in and shadow us for the day, okay? And I'll show you what it's like. I am telling you right now, marketing is the number one thing that a QS firm needs to do better right now. 100% number one thing. And if you're listening to this, chuck this in front of your director to listen to. And if they need to, skip forward to point number five. Because if you haven't got good marketing, you're not showcasing your people, you're not showcasing your projects, you're not showcasing any stories, you're not talking about your wins, you're not talking about your losses. People do not know who you are. You do not exist. Your .com.au website, your .co.nz website, your .com website means nothing. You sitting there on a chair in a suit saying, I've got 40 years experience, quantity surveying, I'm a registered, blah, 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 means nothing. It's not inspiring. It's boring. You may as well go talk to, may as well join the accountancy industry. There's just nothing. Not selling anything there. Selling anything, okay? And recruiters, who do you want to recruit for? You want to recruit for the businesses offering the best. You want to have the best social media, the best branding. You want the most influential directors out there. That's what then the recruiters want to recruit for, right? They will recruit cheaper for those companies than, if they can make an extra $5,000 on a firm across the road, because they'll make way more placements in that firm, without a doubt. And you'll get more, you'll get better people coming through. You'll get more people enjoying what they do. And I don't think what we're talking about here is like huge change. We're not talking about sending people to the moon here. We're talking about possibly being more flexible with your work hours, possibly offering some working from home, possibly bringing in marketing people to really showcase your product more, possibly, getting rid of the old school mentality of they need to have a student experience. Catch yourself on. Start looking at people as track record and start teaching maybe the local vocabulary, local lingo, maybe local project standards. These people speak probably more languages than you. They probably have bigger project experience than you, probably worked on more international standards than you. And I'm sorry to say that, but really start looking at people as a whole, not as as just, some guy who's come in, got a different sounding name, start get over that. And we're not, we're not talking about phenomenal change, just little small bits of change. Is there a different fee structure that we can include? Is there, how can we compete over our competitors? I'm telling you, number one thing that you can do right now is to start to implement these little small things into your business, and you will have big, big, big success. Who am I to know anything? I'm just a dumb recruiter, I probably don't really have much of an idea about any of this sort of stuff. But I believe we've just got to change. We've got to really move forward. We've got to take our marketing to the next level. Simon Sinek said, good marketing offers us a view on the world. Bad marketing offers us a product to buy. So I'm going to leave you with that. I've had a good rant today, and I hope you've enjoyed it. But again, a lot of my clients are in the QS industry. I will give them advice if they ask for it. A lot of them don't want to change. But I'm telling you, the industry is going to be in a very, very, very difficult position if we don't begin to change. We need to adapt. We need to innovate. And we need to stop saying we need to and just start doing it. Start letting people have flexibility. Give them exciting career, bring marketing people in, bring social media people in. Stop worrying about constantly fee. Think about bringing someone social media in who's actually an absolute gun, and think about what that's going to do to bring in the talent who can then bill more. It's the chicken and the egg, isn't it? But anyway, have a great week, folks. I've enjoyed this. Hope you have too. Till next time.